You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, December 5th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. On the program today, Cliff Schechter wrapping up the week in news. Also on the program, looking forward, suggesting a streaming film or maybe a TV show for me to watch over the weekend as I am sequestered in my house because of my family. Matthew Film Guy in studio, ladies and gentlemen. You're noticing a trend? We're trying to get more people in studio. Also on the program today, protests across the nation last night, voicing outrage in the wake of the failure to indict police officer in the choking death of Eric Garner in Staten Island, and the failure to indict a police officer in the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, and in response to the shooting death of a 12-year-old in Cleveland, Ohio, and perhaps the shooting death of another unarmed black man in a housing development in New York City, and probably just the notion of that you're already, I guess, like you're like one-eighth criminal as soon as you show up black in this country. One-eighth? One-quarter? I don't know. Also on the program today, the cycle of Republican radicalization continues. And apparently, people are very upset, or some people are very upset, that the New Republic is not going to be based in Washington anymore and is only going to go 10 print issues. Matthew Film Guy's looking at me. I agree. And apparently, the L.A. Police Department open to investigating sexual assault accusations against Bill Cosby, even if the statute of limitations has passed. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Folks, the other day I was talking about Mila getting me a Hanukkah gift, and I had mentioned that Harrys.com is sponsoring this program. Now, I've talked to you about Harry's before. They sell great razors at an unbelievable price, and they ship them right to your house. They are going to give, just for the holiday, even if you're a returning customer, if you're a new customer and you used our old promo code, that would work for you. But for the holiday, even if you're a returning customer, you get $5 off the Winter Winston set. It is a I mean, it's a good-looking razor. I mean, the bottom line for me is how it makes me feel when I shave, which I don't do often, but and the reason why I don't do it that often has more to do with the fact that I can't get up because I've been up all night with Saul. That's not the point. But it's a good-looking razor. It's like chrome. I guess that's what you call it, right? Silvery-looking. They give you three very high-quality blades, and they give you both the shave. You can get either the shaving cream or the gel. And I go back and forth. I've been more gel as of late. And it's wrapped already. So Mila wants to get me a gift. This is a gift that she can get me. It's $25. She gets with the $5 discount. Majority Report Holiday is the promo code. So even if you're already using Harry's razors, you can still get the extra $5 off. They've got other obviously shaving kits, and you can use a Majority Report on that. But this Winter Winston code, Majority Report Holiday, at harrys.com, spelt like H-A-R-R-Y-S, and then .com. And you get $5 off the Winston set. It's a great shave. And even your 9-year-old daughter, who has saved up and really wants to spend, I'll probably throw her an extra $5 too. I'm not going to make her spend 25. She wants to do it. She's very aggressive in wanting to buy gifts. I'm trying to teach her the value of money. Maybe I should let her. I don't know. Nevertheless, harrys.com, coupon code Majority Report Holiday. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday, and you know what that means. And when you know what that means, you know what this means. And this is what it means.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. How are you this week?
I am doing especially well, Sam. How are you?
Hold on. For some reason, we're down on the volume. Try that, Cliff.
I'm doing great. No, can you hear me all right? I'm doing pretty well, Sam. Pretty well, if I say so myself.
So, all right, let's get right into this, because it's what's been going on with these protests. I mean, certainly in New York City, And not just in New York. They're in Oakland, California, Boston, Savannah, Georgia, in L.A., in Chicago. They blocked a highway in Boston.
They shut off Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, which is a pretty amazing feat. I mean, if you people know Chicago well, that's big. You know, so I mean, we're not talking small protests here. We're talking. I mean, we're at a tipping point here, which happened with these kinds of things, and we've reached that. So that now, you know, what the biggest problem obviously has been that this has been standard practice for years. I don't even want to try and comprehend, you know, what had happened in the name of quote unquote justice to innocent African Americans. Now, really, you know, since slavery ended, but even really since the, you know, the 1960s and since more recent civil rights reforms and anything else. And it really helps, I think, more of America. I feel like this is almost like a moment, I hope it is, you know, where, and I don't mean I hope what I'm about to say, but the reaction to it, when people saw the protests when John Kennedy was trying to integrate the University of Alabama and Bull Connor came out and was turning the fire hoses on African-American children. Obviously, that was terrible, but I don't think the rest of the country really knew until they saw that on TV and they were horrified. And it led to some civil rights reforms. And I feel like we're going through a very similar period right now because I don't think most people understood. I don't think they understood why stop and frisk was a problem because they thought, well, everybody could be equally stopped and frisked, right? No, it's mostly African-Americans and Hispanics. I mean, there's constitutional issues there too, but, you know, the people who are being targeted, very clear who they are. You know, most, I think a lot of white people, and again, I'm not saying necessarily conservatives, just people that don't pay close attention. Cops are, you know, respectful of them. Don't pull them over for no reason. Don't put them in chokeholds when they're just standing on the corner. So I think this is an amazing moment in that people are having exposure to seeing what this is like, who I don't think have known. And I'm hoping this, you know, the sort of thing you always want to accomplish with these things, you know, when you want justice is you need to take people who are advocates for your cause and turn them into activists willing to go out and do what's necessary. And you need to take people who are sort of, you know, agnostic and turn them into at least advocates who are on your side. At least what I've seen, I think some of that's happening because there's no way. I mean, you know, another one just happened last night in Phoenix. I mean, this just won't stop, and it won't stop because it reminds me of after what you're doing the gun stuff I do after Newtown, when suddenly we were actually paying attention to every shooting as opposed to just ignoring them. And then people were shocked and were like, oh, my God, this happens a lot more than I ever thought about because now the media is reporting it. And that's what this feels like, is that, you know, these kinds of shootings that were probably only getting local attention are now all getting national attention. And, you know, we need to look in the mirror and say, what kind of a country are we? We need to do that a lot lately, by the way. But this is an issue of basic justice, basic respect for other people, and basic accountability. I mean, we have a system right now, you know, a grand jury system where normal people, as in everybody else, me, you, anybody, white, black, whoever it is, there's only a 1 in 11,000 chance, according to statistics, that we won't be indicted. So let's call it 99% plus, that we will be indicted if a prosecutor wants to indict us. The police, on the other hand, the statistics that came out the other day show that only 3% of them get indicted. And, I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. It's sort of like why we create an independent counsel for the president because right. The attorney general has a conflict of interest. It's why the lobbying system is so effed up in Washington because some guy leaves Congress, joins a lobbying firm, and then, like, 6 months later, I mean, they have a two-year cooling off period. I don't know how many of them respect that. And they're back with their buddies and saying, oh, yeah, you know, just throw a few $100 million to my guys here. You can't have people that know each other, work together, and like each other, you know, certainly judging each other.
Well, I mean, narrowly speaking, on that question alone, we know that, look, if you are a district attorney, you rely on the cops. I mean, not just even your buddies. I mean, you have a serious working relationship. Also, from a political standpoint, your career goes nowhere if the cops if the cops aren't supporting you in your political career after being district attorney, you've got a real big problem there.
That's true. And I would also add to that, Sam, that you know, there's also cross-pollination. I mean, there are guys who go back and
right.
more in the direction of cops to the prosecutor's office. But that happens. That's not unusual for someone to rise up the ranks of the police and then go to law school. And you know, so there's the connections are just – there's a myriad of them.
It's interesting what's happening. I mean, there's so many different layers to the, you know, what we've seen over the past, several months. I mean, in terms of both in terms of problems and in terms of solutions. But narrowly speaking, I mean, and I agree with you. I think, you know, there's something about the Eric Garner thing is just seems to be registering with people as being so egregious that it's reaching those people you're talking about who don't pay attention to this. You know, the same people who are texting me in-laws who were texting me like, I can't believe this, what's going on. The looting in Ferguson is so wrong. Simultaneously are also saying now, or I should say subsequently saying, like, this Eric Garner thing is outrageous. I mean, I think it's, you know, a function, and I don't think it's terribly complicated to see why, if someone is just sort of very casually interested in this stuff, Eric Garner thing registers more with them.
I mean, that's just so clear.
There's video of what happened. I mean,
right.
I think
Ferguson's pretty clear. Well, we have video,
yes,
which is the key part of it. But also, we know that the coroner, you know, in this case, determined that this was a homicide.
Right.
So when you put those,
I think
two
the video
facts,
is even more important because I think like any
I do.
Facts,
I do.
Any facts can always be sort of presented and mutated through the various. But you know, all you got to do is watch the video, and you just walk away going like, oh wow,
you're sickened. And if right. you have kids, you're sitting there like, this guy said, please leave me alone. I'm not doing anything.
Right.
I can't breathe, and I don't want to go on from there. I'm not saying it's all equally important. You're right. The video is by far the most important thing. But I still do think it's important that a coroner, upon seeing this body, determine this was a homicide.
Right.
Right. This is somebody still who also right. is tied to the police department.
I totally agree with that.
And so, you know, the fact that this outcome could come from this case tells you that it's not working. We'll never get anything under a Republican Congress, of course, but there just has to be a federal law.
Well,
this cannot be allowed to stay in the hands of prosecutors. We can't rely on states to do the right thing here. This is one of those things
we need
all civil rights.
I think,
you know?
I think, you know, like, let's say, just narrowly speaking, in New York State, it does not seem that far-fetched to me that we will get some type of, I mean, maybe it's in New York City, or perhaps if Cuomo ever takes his head out of his buttocks, there is a chance of some type of, you know, police review boards people were talking about 30, 40 years ago. Maybe it's time to see those, or maybe it's an independent counsel who is specifically there. You know, some other form, I guess, of a police review board. I guess it functions in the same way, which, you know, so that – because, you know, we saw this with McCullough in Ferguson quite clearly. People can – well – I don't think, but people might argue whether or not there should have been charges there. But it's quite clear that he went to the grand jury as a way of avoiding charging Darren Wilson. And I think we saw the same thing in this Staten Island case. These grand juries are set up to be basically a way for a prosecutor to show up and simply say, here's the evidence I would present at trial. That becomes the standard. You have no one in, like you say, 99% of grand jury hearings arguing the other side of the case. In other words, I'm going to impeach that evidence that you've offered, or except
right.
for in those situations where the district attorney doesn't want an indictment. And so they basically say, OK, I'm not going to push just my evidence or even all of my evidence. I'm going to allow the cop to come in and talk to you for 4 hours, and I'm not going to in any way try and impeach what he's saying. And so,
So
in New York, you know, there seems to be more potential, perhaps, for some type of, you know, Letitia James is already out there saying we need a special prosecutor, really a police review board by another name. And, you know, there we do have a guy in office who has instituted some reforms since he's gotten in office. You know, the stop and frisk is a big one. $130 million the other day for some sort of de-incarceration projects.
I will say this quickly, and, you know, I think I'm colored by some of the work that I talked about 2 weeks ago on the Innocence Project and seeing the police frame somebody. In that case, it was African-American. I don't want, in my opinion, I don't think we can get to a point where we say, well, if the prosecutor can't do the job and doesn't, then we'll bring in an independent, you know, counsel. I think that needs to happen immediately. I think this should never be
right.
In
oh,
the
no, that's what I'm saying.
Hands.
I think that's because what Letitia James is saying. Set
okay.
up an
we need
office.
A pool of these guys, right?
Whenever
I think we should have
a
almost like a core of
right.
them.
Whenever, like yeah. a police review board. Whenever
yep.
there's an issue with a cop, it doesn't go to the district attorney. It goes to this independent counsel.
That's exactly right.
And you know, right now the president is, you know, there was a following Ferguson. There was a couple of policy changes. You know, it's not enough to me to bring in the Department of Justice in these situations because there needs to be clearly the system is not working now. And when you bring in the Department of Justice, you need to the bar becomes higher in terms of prosecuting a cop. You need to show a certain level of willful intent that is greater than it would be under a state authority. And so that's why you need to create these things on,
yes.
on a state-by-state basis. You know, it'll be interesting to see if this can be sustained and we'll see some real reform. And the dual track is, right, is the awareness of white America of like, hey, you know, and not just the idea that
the awareness, Sam, I see is leading to a longer term change. And I think that's a good thing. I think it will change attitudes faster than anything else. If anything good's going to come of this, it'll change attitudes faster than anything else could have. Sadly, the short-term change you're talking about, which is them creating, you know, whatever, a group of 20, 30, however many of these kinds of prosecutors that can go anywhere around the country when this stuff happens. I mean, I know what you're saying, you know, about the, or the state can pick, but I would like it all to be in the federal government's hands. When it comes to civil rights stuff, I don't trust local people. We have a nice history of that, don't we?
Yeah.
In this country, and the problem is that you know, you can't expect Congress to do anything positive at this point. So, it's going to take a while. You know, no matter how angry people are, it's going to take a while. But I think the longer term cultural change could be significant. So. You know, take what you can get, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see.
But Rand Paul is a libertarian, so he obviously cares. And he'll probably jump in with his Superman cape to sponsor a bill to do this and save all of us. Because, as we all know, those damn cigarette taxes are a killer.
Right.
Did you see that whole thing, by the way?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment. I think we touched on it. Did we touch on this yesterday in the show? This is the interesting thing is that the talk from the libertarians of the militarization of the police, I think is good. I think it also sort of misses the point. All this stuff was around. Before police became so heavily militarized, it certainly has changed the dynamic in terms of protesting, and it's certainly an important issue. But this general dynamic of the criminalization of black people has been around for a long time, and the idea that it is a function of taxes on cigarettes and the sort of the unintended consequences of taxes
There's
on cigarettes
so many things
is that
going
black
on
guys
here.
Get strangled to death for doing nothing is just
what a classic libertarian response, which is, you know, the response immediately goes to taxes. sure, they care about other issues, but that's really always what it's about, libertarianism. It's always just, you know, don't take my taxes. So it's so funny that he would take it there immediately. I mean, especially, he's such a tone deaf. I mean,
well, that's
really,
the thing.
He's really not a very smart guy. I mean, he's running around the country, talking about, you know, sentencing reform and showing up at NAACP meetings and doing all this stuff to show that he cares, and talking about reforming, you know, voting so that to make it easier for African Americans and other stuff. It's a whole lot of talk, and we're glad to hear you talking about it. Wonderful. But when it comes right down to an actual incident and something happening, right, this is the response we get. I mean, the response is, you know, and clearly there's many problems that are going into this, but still, you know, the police, you know, to me, again, to come back to an issue, talk about the availability of firearms has a lot to do with it. I think a lot of policemen are quicker on the trigger because you don't know what the hell somebody else has. I think there was one, you know, study I looked at, I think it was from 2011, that showed in England there were zero cop shootings. In Japan there were zero cop shootings. In Germany there were 8, and there were something like 490 something here. I mean, you know, so this is a serious problem when they feel like they have to compete with the guys on the street, because who knows what kind of firepower they're going to have. Then there's the issue of the militarization of our police forces, of course, and that they're getting, when a guy has basically a tank and is driving it around, he's going to use it. So there's that issue too. But, you know, some defense contractors make money off of this, and we know what we're up against. So I'm not saying these other factors aren't present, and they're very important. But again, it's still in almost all cases young black males who are getting shot. So,
right. I mean, this is the, you know, whether it's they're shooting or it's, you know, it's water hoses, it's water cannons, like you say. I mean, this is, at the end of the day, this is about racism. Now, with that said, we do get a lot of phone calls from black people, you know, promoting a Milton Friedman video on the tobacco tax. But
are you sure you're getting those calls right now?
But here's what's amazing about that sort of the Rand Paul thing is that, this is one of those perfect cases, I mean, which illustrates sort of just pure BS. It's like they're sitting around the whatever office it is at Rand Paul Central, and they're saying, hey, you're going to go on TV and someone's going to ask you about this. And you have to understand that, you know, your dad's empire was, if not built upon, but certainly shored up by
For Cocoa Puffs.
Well, no, let's be honest, racism, and you know, that's not your brand, Rand, but there's no reason
brand,
to go out there,
Rand,
if you want to do well and alienate the races.
You're different, Rand. You fired the Southern Avenger.
Right, exactly. You fired him when it came out,
exactly. Your form of neo-confederacy is much more quiet.
Right, but you need to say something, and you need to go on offense. And so you could say the tax stuff, and there's not a single human being other than the most sort of fringe or, you know, sort of deluded libertarian. With all due respect, 19-year-old, I was 19 at one point. I wasn't that deluded, but I was deluded in other ways. You know, sitting God knows where, you know, playing D&D. I was playing D&D too, so I don't know. I don't know what it is. Who's going to buy this unintended consequences of the tobacco tax leading to people being strangled?
No,
but just,
I mean,
say it anyway.
He would have been smart enough to go back to one of his old sort of standbys and try to avoid the racism. If he wants to avoid talking about black and white, he should have talked about the militarization of police forces. It fits with what he believes in. I mean, I'm being cynical here. But at least he could have said that. And as I said, neither that nor the availability of guns, and there's other factors here too, play the role that racism does. Clearly,
yeah, but that, I mean, how do you
they
answer?
They do play a role, and he could have said that. But to say a freaking tobacco tax, I mean, are you kidding me? You know, it just – it doesn't – It's laughable, as so many things this guy says are.
Of course,
but
it's laughable.
You know, in his defense,
this is just his way of.
He may have been trying on a particularly uncomfortable rug that day, and so he couldn't think straight.
Well, and he would also The
dead raccoon he had on his head that day, maybe they hadn't checked first to make sure it fully had been put down.
No, I think it's just a way of like, look, we're gonna punt on this one, but we can never say that we're gonna punt. Just do the tax thing, and then they'll go to somebody else. I mean, that's.
Well, I think that just makes it worse. I think in the end he should have punted. Or we should have talked about something that at least had the slightest bit of credibility.
Well, what are you going to say about militarization of police when it comes to Garner? It's just like, well, you know, the lifting weights is there's too much lifting weight.
Too much weightlifting there.
Because of government
you're right.
intrusion.
I mean, it's tougher to make it, but you could
government
say that
nutritional standards. It you know, making who knows. I mean,
you could say it's created the militarization has created a much more gung-ho culture. I don't know. You could say something, but
now,
you know what?
I want to just pivot on something.
Him.
I just want to pivot to something, because what's interesting is that the president came out, and I think it was Jelani Cobb in The New Yorker had examples of what President Obama has said, even back from the time, I think, before he was even in this, maybe was even in the Senate before 2008. I can't remember if it was a state senator or federal senator, in response to different shootings at different times. And the one following Garner was the most sort of, I guess, aggressive insofar as like,
right.
We really need to have the cops talk about this. And we saw that from de Blasio here in New York. And again, this is, you know, it's New York, A, B. De Blasio has obviously like a far more emotional investment in this because his kid is subject to this type of treatment. And de Blasio was blasted by the cops essentially for coming out, and they were complaining, he's throwing the cops under the bus. Well, you know what?
Oh, can you do that? What next thing you're going to be putting your hands up in the air like you're a football player?
But
terrible.
But what we haven't seen is the right sort of like getting on President Obama about this Garner thing. I mean, the Garner thing just seems to be so explicit that they can't really push back on this. But it's been interesting.
Few of them have, you know, to their credit, and I don't like to give them credit for anything because they're mostly idiots. But Charles Krauthammer actually agreed.
Yeah, even Glenn Beck. I mean, look, this is just one of those things that's so naked that you can't possibly hope to retain credibility with anyone outside of the sort of the pure unadulterated Fox.
Imbecile.
Yes. And so I don't know. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if how aggressive the DOJ gets on this. And if there is anything else that comes out of the administration. I mean, we saw something out of Ferguson, but I want to pivot to, you know, what is not being sort of like we're not talking about, and for obvious reasons, particularly this week, but the Republicans seem to have completely folded on all the things that just 2 weeks ago they were saying was going to cause, sort of the complete failure of the U.S. government. I mean, it's just interesting what's happened in the past 6 weeks.
Not even. 6 weeks. I mean, Ebola is still killing all of us.
Well, you know, Ebola is completely off the map now. ISIS is completely off the map now. Now, those things were obviously hyped going into the election, but the president's executive orders on immigration feel like that happened, you know, years ago now.
Yeah.
And the Republicans have already said, we're basically in full retreat mode on this. We've thrown a couple of bones in that we're going to do a reauthorization of the DHS budget in, I guess it's March or February. But that's going to fall flat on their face. They can't defund the
executive. Do you see the House's fun little symbolic vote on immigration now?
Yes.
Which was like, you're a bad guy and we disagree, which I would call the giving up the Hispanic vote for the next 10 years.
Well, here's something that I want to – in addition to the big bump in the polls that the president got from Latinos, and you know, if we have time, we can go into view this from Obama's perspective. I don't know if I buy like he's unshackled; he can finally be the guy he wants to be, or as much as like this is his only option. Great, I don't care either way, frankly.
Right.
But Paul Waldman had an interesting piece. I think this was in the American Prospect. I'm not sure. There was a new poll on the idea of citizenship, path to citizenship versus deportation. November of 2013, just about a year ago.
Yeah.
Republicans supported a path to citizenship over deportation 43% to 38%. Okay, so 43% wanted them to have a path to citizenship, the 38% deportation. Today, it is deportation 54% to path to citizenship 27%. So they have become more entrenched in a position over the course of 13 months.
Yeah, and that's what they've been fed. I mean, they've been getting fed that by Fox News, by Ted Cruz, by, you know, and there haven't been even the ones who are supporters of it, of a path to citizenship here, you know, McCain, which who knows, I think today he is, but tomorrow maybe he's not. And you know, Lindsey Graham, they'll certainly speak up about, you know, going and bombing ISIS. But they can't be bothered to open their mouths and talk about immigration reform, which they supposedly believe in very strongly too. So you don't, you know, that's just two guys. But there's plenty of other Republicans like that too who are in favor of it. But you know, Jeb Bush. But they won't open their mouths to fight it. You know, they let Ted Cruz and Fox News and the rest of them and Rush Limbaugh do all the talking. So it's not really a surprise that the Republican Party has moved into its usual, you know, which is de facto crazy position on that issue, because they're not hearing anything else.
But it's interesting because they have now, it's the classic dynamic. They have now created their Frankenstein and they can't come back and do anything about it. Right. So they've ginned up all of this angst and anger, and then they are completely flaccid in terms of delivering. So the dynamic between the expectations they've created and what they're able to deliver and their theoretical capacity to deliver, because now, right, they're about to control the Senate and the House, is fascinating to watch how and what that dynamic does, where you have created greater expectations in terms that what the president has done has been sort of, you know, the equivalent of I don't know, the ascendance of Hitler, not to quote Ben Carson, and the Republicans theoretically have more power to do something about it, yet they're doing almost even less. Because they have that more power, right? Because they could shut down the government now.
They could.
Very easily.
But they realize that that's the train to crazy town that leaves their pollsters up, at least, you know, the ones that are sort of still – that have bad policies and the rest, but at least are sort of somewhat – they're still somewhat in the reality-based universe. But, you know, I mean, that's – yeah, they could, there's plenty of things they can do, but they're not going to do any of them. As you said, they're going to – huff and puff and sort of fake it and threaten to shut down the government or threaten to do this and pass stupid symbolic measures about how terrible this is. You know, it's the end of democracy, except for, of course, when Reagan did it. You know, they're not going to do anything. No, I agree. I mean, it's kind of like they were ready to pass this tax extenders deal, you know, and with that, they remember what they were saying? Well, with what you do with immigration – I don't know if we can work with you anymore. Well, that took all of like a week when it was something they wanted, you know. So they're just full of crap.
Let's also, just before we end, talk a little bit about the New Republic, because it really and I, you know, sometimes I have a very hard time knowing how much it permeates people's consciousness, these type of things that are so relevant. I mean, obviously, because we're in the media and
right.
But also, you know, the New Republic played a very big role in a couple of things. One being the, you know, sort of providing the supposed liberal cover for the Iraq war in many respects.
Mm-hmm. And Joe Lieberman in general, but the whole run up to that. Also giving Betsy McCoy a space to make up lies about Hillary Clinton's health care bill and then Barack Obama's health care bill, which
right.
was
And you know, yes, they did endorse Joe Lieberman in 04 against even as not a Democrat. But also the most important thing is, yes, the maybe I don't know if it's the most important, but thing is, he has the bell curve under Andrew Sullivan. And that, you know, was to even the liberal New Republic. Well, go ahead.
That was always the statement. No, well, that was always the statement. Even the liberal New Republic supports. Basically what they did is they played the role in sort of the literary, if you want, or in sort of the smart political magazine role that Joe Lieberman and now Joe Manchin and people like them have played in the Democratic Party politically, or the DLC or places like that have played sort of in you know, politics and philosophically, and because they became a very sort of neoliberal magazine, and really starting in the 80s, because this was a magazine founded by progressives. You know, it's kind of in Teddy Roosevelt's living room. I mean, it was a very important progressive newspaper, you know, magazine for a long time. And then it started in the 80s, you know, hiring some of these duds. Some, I mean, Fred Barnes, for Christ's sake, was there for a while. And I would say it did a lot of damage in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, even Peter Beinart, which you're talking about the lead up to the Iraq War.
Yeah.
But what I will say is over the last sort of half dozen years or so, at least it seemed to me, it had gotten a lot better and gotten a little closer back to its mission. And there were some very smart writers there, Alec McGillis and Noam Schreiber and some others.
Jonathan
Cohn,
Brian Beutler writes there, Rebecca Traister.
Well, when you say this, be careful to say we think they still write there. I don't know. I mean, you know, so basically what happened was...
Yeah, tell people, yes.
Yeah, so what happened was that Chris Hughes, who is a co-founder of Facebook, bought it a couple of years ago, and I think that there were always sort of tensions there. But he and brought in somebody to be a CEO there from Yahoo over the head of Franklin Foer, who is the, I think I'm pronouncing his name right, but he was an editor of the magazine who everybody there loved, and they decided that they want this to be more of a digital property that gets clicks than a magazine. Its role, of course, has always been as sort of a political philosophy and policy and arts and culture magazine, and now they're talking about moving it to New York and making it so that, you know, they basically said people there to everybody in their meeting, I guess last week or whatever, you should view it now like a tech startup.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, a list, Ryan Leza, who writes for The New Yorker, and so it's not just them, by the way, it's also people that were there at one point or another or are contributing editors there, a good dozen of them, you know, have asked them to take their names off the masthead. But I mean, I think they've had a walkout of about 20 or more people. Like right now, it's a ghost town there. I don't know who's still working for them. So, hint: if you have a subscription, you may want to cancel that now.
You know, that's the thing is they were just pushing re-upping the subscription. And because I subscribe, obviously subscribe to a bunch of these different things. And I agree with you. I mean, I think since the post Marty Peretz days and even in the waning days of Marty Peretz, there was some value there. It's interesting, though, because what has also come out of this, like, for instance, there was a little bit between Jonathan Chait and Ta-Nehisi Coates. Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote something to the effect on Twitter. Yeah, wait a second. I have it right in front of me, I think. He wrote, sorry whenever journalists lose jobs, but some of us colored folk will always remember TNR with mixed feelings, of course, because of that bell curve stuff.
The bell curve, right.
You can't really say, like, oh, you know, we're liberal. We just want you to know we're liberal, so we're looking at this, you know, very objectively, but, you know, black people may just have lower IQs. And genetically speaking, and Jonathan Chait said, here it is. He says, if you ever suffer serious misfortune, and I don't know who the person is, I mean, to make this analogy, who's going to suffer serious misfortune. Some, yes, journalists lost their jobs. I am not going to use it as an occasion to revisit a beef. I mean, that is so indicative of what was problematic with the New Republic. Like, it's just, you just have a beef.
We used to have a problem with the story that defined an entire race as dumber.
Yeah, as mainstreaming the idea that you are genetically inferior, okay?
So what's your peak? I mean, get over it, man.
Right,
come on,
man. Like, oh, gosh. Oh, sorry.
Just smoke a joint. Don't all you people do that?
Right. I mean,
that's what Jonathan Chait should have said. I think Jonathan Chait has some good moments.
High five, right?
Exactly.
Don't be a jive turkey about this.
Yes. Yeah,
we have
on.
A much broader legacy to consider. Nah, I mean.
Well, but that's the amazing thing is that, and then if you bring up the notion of the bell curve or what or Iraq, and there's also, you know, look, this is a very
healthcare
white.
I mean, it hugely damaged.
People say,
I'd
like,
say
but
one
that's,
of the big reasons we didn't
you
get
can't hold
with Bill and Hillary, it started off with that huge piece filled right. with lies by Betsy McCoy there, and everybody's saying, well, I mean, she wrote the New Republic. It must be
right.
true.
Right. And that was Andrew Sullivan who was, I think, the editor at the time that went up. And if you say then, like, you know, if you cite those examples, you hear back from them like, well, that was 20 years ago. Well, then, OK, so why are we lamenting this again? Because of its storied past, except for the parts that were not so storied? I mean,
yeah,
look,
I've had a list of people and a whole bunch have said good riddance. And I understand why. I'm only lamenting in that I think there's some good people there that lost their jobs and I feel sorry for them. I think also that it had come back a little bit more to its true mission that it had up through the 70s,
right.
where it had some great pieces on progressive economics and, you know, which is what it started off as a progressive magazine, which back in the early 20th century was mostly about economic issues. And they had a lot of that kind of stuff going on. But I also, you know, when we have these conversations, I always like to sort of, you know, look at it in sort of a meta way and the broader implications of these things.
Right.
And I think broader implication here is you've got, you know, or billionaires or I don't know what Chris Hughes, I think he only has $700 million. So he can't get that third Lamborghini. Actually, he can. But I think that, you know, the very wealthy with their own agenda is basically coming in and buying up everything. Which essentially includes politicians,
but,
real estate that
wait a
wrecks
second, but
cities.
Wait a second. Listen, the bottom line is the New Republic has lost money for a long time. This is one of those situations where it's like what shocks me is like, dude, you got $700 million.
Why
like,
do you, that's me too, exactly.
Why, like, if you're going to get in, first off.
You buy that magazine for its prestige. But, you don't buy it to make money.
Right. And it's like, also, you know what? If you want to make money, here's what you should not do. Get involved with media. Like, if you want to make money, there go buy a factory that is making, you know, toothpicks and just undercut and come up with, like, just a quicker fat, you know, rate. Whatever. There's so many other ways to actually make money. What I don't understand is that, you know, if I was a guy with 700 mil, I would
money
buy,
would kind of be the last thing on my mind. At that
well,
point.
If I'm going to buy a media property like that, what I'm going to do is, like, make what, you know, the people perceive as the New Republic. Like, I would make something like that. Like, this is not going to make any money. The interesting thing, I mean, to take
if
this
I had
into
money
meta,
like that, I would at least sink $200 million into the Majority Report.
I would, Michael I would just pointed at me like, I do that now with the Majority Report.
I'd put the money into the Majority Report. Well, I'd get it on TV. It would be like, nationwide, and we could then
gonna,
no one could ignore it.
Or what you could do is just on a lark, put all your money into turning the New Republic into a Palestinian advocacy journal just to make Marty Peretz finally have his brain explode
right.
in a final meltdown.
Right. Then you
actually,
could just
you
could switch it up every other
two
month.
Two versions of that journal and send it to Marty Peretz and Joe Lieberman. That's
I mean, there's so much more interesting things to do than to make the next BuzzFeed, which incidentally ain't going to happen. I mean, that's
no.
the other thing is like there is no going from the New Republic to the next BuzzFeed.
You need a new property where you bring in all like-minded people that are going for a BuzzFeed thing, but also that need to find, well, what's the next thing? Huffington Post did what they did. Whether you like it or not, I'm not judging right now.
Right.
We can have that conversation another time. But the Huffington Post did what it did and found the way to get traffic. And then from that, some of the guys who had been involved with it went and turned it up to 11, so to speak, with BuzzFeed. And I'd say Upworthy is another outgrowth of that. But now if you want to do something like that, if that's what your goal is, as he said, a tech startup, a digital property, there are ways to do that. You don't do that with the New Republic. I mean, that's not what, you know, that's not what the New Republic is. And that's not what the skill set is of anybody there. So I'm not sure why you'd even be upset that most people resign, because you can't work with they're there to do journalism, and all of it long form journalism, and that kind of stuff.
Well,
it doesn't make any sense to me. That's all.
Ezra Klein had a really interesting piece about the difference between I think he called it divergent and convergent strategies. A convergent strategy is one, and this is what interests me. I mean, just in the context of this show, and I should say, we were going to start our Indiegogo campaign today, but we just couldn't get it together yet, and so we're going to hopefully launch
really
it Monday.
Honestly, you just stop but, fucking around.
No, you're not kidding. But this is what struck me, because I never thought about it this way. But I think when we talk about what differentiates this show from other shows out there in a similar vein, he talked about convergent and divergent sort of strategies in media. And the convergent one online is you use internet best practices, which means you optimize your search engine headlines, and you do stories, you cover stories that you determine not based upon what you want to do, but what is already happening out there. So the way that they determine what is going to be on the front page of BuzzFeed or a lot of these places, or Huffington Post,
they watch what's trending. I mean, they literally are guys who sit there all day and see what everybody on Reddit is doing, see what Google through Google they see who's getting hits and what's, and that's what they do.
A/B testing et cetera, et cetera. And what the New Republic did, and in some instances I had a problem with it, or at least in this context, what it was set up that it could do was to be a divergent, which is we're just going to put out there what we want to put out there, and hopefully we will have an audience. And the best way to do that is if you're not as concerned with becoming a billion-dollar market capitalization media product. And if you have $700, $800 million, what's the point of having that if you're still having to chase it? Right?
I want to say two things to this.
But that said, like a guy who's not going to have $700 million. I mean, folks. I don't want to break anybody's hearts here, but Sam Cedar is not going to be a $700 million.
Oh, you fool yourself.
Well, that's what the Indiegogo is for, to get you there.
First of all, the Indiegogo will probably bring in $100 million. Second of all, I've seen you when you're in Vegas.
And then I'm going to take it to Vegas.
I've seen how you gamble, and one of these times I see $700 million coming your way.
Definitely.
It's inevitable. But to me, the two things are this. First of all, you also, what's going on out there, you can create sort of a hybrid. You know, that's what I feel like the Daily Beast is, where I write. Which is they have, I think, some very good coverage of some issues and good columns and columnists. But, yes, you also get, you know, hey, look, here's the brushed-up version of Kim Kardashian's enormous ass. And they'll have that on the side. And, you know, I'm sure that helps bring traffic. That is a possibility. I don't think it is for the New Republic. Again, the Daily Beast was created out of nothing. The New Republic has its brand, and it's not that.
Right. The point is, you're sitting there. You've got $700 million. You've got this brand. You're well as well situated as anybody on the spectrum of everything to just do something that is like, we're going to do something that is just it's really interesting, and maybe we can get to break even. I mean, why else? You know,
right? That's what we're going to do. And otherwise, first of all, what are you doing? I mean, give me $700 million, the life that I would live. I mean,
well, he's a young guy. No, I appreciate that somebody wants to go in and make something that is important. But I don't know. And I guess maybe that's how.
But that's what he's not. Clearly, that's not what he's doing. And that's. I mean, what I would have done. Let's say. So if I thought that if I had $700 million and I thought the New Republic was something that was crappily owned, I could buy it, bring in people who are more progressive, who are more true to their mission, who wrote better journalism. I would do all that, and I would step out of the damn way and let people who I thought were good enough.
Oh no,
to run
I would
run
be
it.
In there. I mean, look, I have no problem with somebody buying something and then meddling with it. That's fine.
Well, I don't either. Like, I just wouldn't, because I'd be lying on an island somewhere.
What a waste. And not like, what, you know, I'd want to sit in there and just watch everybody. I mean, that's theoretically why you do it, right? It's like, I'm going to finally get a chance. I was never good as a baseball player as a kid, but I'm going to buy a team and I'm going to hang out on the field and I'm going to make these guys play catch with me before the game. And that's great. That's great. I mean,
I mean, that's cool if that's what you want. I would buy it just hopefully to make it a good magazine and do something positive. And then I would head off to my beach place on St. John.
Well, all I'm saying is that when I get my $100 million from this Indiegogo campaign, yes. I don't know if there's a baseball team I can buy. Maybe I'll buy a minor league one, and I'll go out there and I'll play catch with these guys all the time. And they're gonna have to like pretend like, wow, oh man, when I throw the ball into the glove,
you might be able to turn into a backup.
Sam,
second
can you back off that heat, man? Because I don't want to just purchase
the Cyclones.
Maybe that's what I'll do.
He's too busy picking fights on Twitter with people. So I don't, he might be able to play.
But I mean, because I think on this show, we're going to have a more limited appeal. I like to think of it as we're more exclusive.
If
you don't like, a certain narrow band of what we're going to talk about, then, you know, you're going to have to leave. If you're looking for, you know, I mean, Kim Kardashian, is she still popular?
She's still relevant.
There's an enormous picture of her ass that was out there recently, okay. All greased up, and it was actually
Cliff's level, Cliff's sort of commentary on that on various streams of social media was very interesting. And I've never seen someone so eloquently connect gun control to Kim Kardashian's ass before. It was very impressive, Cliff.
Did you really do that?
I like to find the common themes between large greased asses and guns.
Well,
my
point is, I know that we lost a little bit of search engine optimization by never covering Kim Kardashian. But honestly, if she was sitting here, I mean, presumably she would be fully clothed, but if she was sitting here across from us, I wouldn't know who she was. And so it's just not happening.
Yeah.
And so
hi.
I don't really spend
too
much
time. That's awesome. Oppose means testing for Social Security, young lady.
That dumbass family is, and maybe I might know who she is because, you know.
Exactly.
She assaults the senses everywhere. I think you need to like let somebody else go on. I don't know. I can keep talking.
No,
all
right. In fact, you're right. Cliffy, until next week, buddy.
All right. Thanks, bud. Bye. Take care.
All right, folks. Now we're going to take a quick break. And what are you doing? Now you go to the bathroom? Are you serious? So Matthew Film Guy has been sitting there the whole time, and Cliff just went away. So the Matthew Film Guy, do we have a Jimmy Reefcake song?
Oh, I'm up. Let me just give me a moment here.
What is he? He's going to go vomit because he's so nervous.
Do you have a Jimmy Reefcake song?
Right, that's the question I just asked you.
I'm checking now.
It's unbelievable. As your producer, Sam, let me ask you that question. Okay, here we go.
I'm looking. I don't think he sent us a song, no.
Hold on for a second.
No. No song.
He didn't. Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to call into our phone thing while we wait.
Oh, wait. Was December 2nd this week?
That was this week, wasn't it?
Yes.
We do. He sent the song days ago. Let's do this.
Thank you for your patience.
All right. Let's...
downloading it right now. Here.
All right. Let's hear it. This is Jimmy Reefcake song.
I'm downloading it right now. Here we go. Hey, it's not my fault Matthew Film Guy chose to go to the bathroom right now.
Well, but I mean, we know every Friday Jimmy Reefcake has a song. It's...
back.
Well, no. He... Oh,
here
my
we
God.
Go. Here we go. Here we go.
Where do I go?
The song is called A Nonviolent Drug by Jimmy Reefcake.
In the UK, most cops don't have guns. In the USA, they always will. And we'll spend our taxes on more police cams so we can watch the cops kill. They're covering the protest on TV, talking about marijuana smoke. I say make it legal, pass it out for free. I'm serious, man, no joke. Because marijuana is a non-violent drug, but it's illegal and it can turn a real nice guy into a thug. They patrol the streets and they seem to shoot for no good reason. You'd be safer up here in a friggin' deer suit in the middle of hunting season, yeah. Listen to you snicker, listen to you laugh at my call to legalize it. I don't give a crap if you like to smoke it or if you wanna criticize it. Honestly, 75 years of oppression, and who feels the pain? I said the reefer madness, I'm feeling it now, but you are the one who's insane. Because marijuana is a non-violent drug, but it's illegal and it can turn a real nice guy into a thug. They patrol the streets and they seem to shoot with no good reason. You'd be better up here in a friggin' deer suit in the middle of hunting season, yeah.
So that was about marijuana. I don't know what the 75 years of oppression is. That the of pot smokers, or I don't know. All right, we should turn Matt's up.
Hello.
Okay, yeah, you got to speak into that.
Hello, hello. Matthew Film Guy here, reporting live from Brooklyn.
All right, is he loud enough, folks? Wait a second. The reason why we can't hear from Matthew Film Guy yet is because we have yet to hear Matthew Film Guy's theme song.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your strength.
Now, I got to say, I don't know if people have noticed, but I've started to wear dual headphones again. And because as we were sort of trying to fix the sound in here, I found that obviously I needed to do that. And it I like it better. And for the first time, I've heard that song clearly. And it's quite good.
Yeah, it really is. Jason Pace. Shout out to Jason Pace for writing that amazing song.
I think we got to put Matthew's sound just up a little bit. I'm just looking at the nice cast meter
check
there.
Check one. Check.
There we go. Now we're at the similar.
Check. Similar.
Hello, Matthew. Welcome to our new in-progress studio. As you can see, is he not sitting up straight?
No, just say put the mic as close. To the
closer. Way. Take it in. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. Own your space.
Yeah, there you go. My. Now you can put them down a notch. Now it's a big difference.
Thank you.
The real potential in this
amazing
office, right?
What
an upgrade!
What an upgrade! What an amazing upgrade! It just looks and feels so much better, and I'm sure it will reflect on the quality of the show as well.
I think actually it's going to make us like literally healthier. The other place was
you're not sucking in the cancerous fumes of whatever it was going on in there.
There was a lot of nastiness that was happening in that place. And the only thing that remains to be seen, it's quite clear to me that we may never have to put the heat on in this place. But in the summer, that could be a bit of a problem.
And I like that Matt and Mike are now, like, together. They're, like, a team. They're physically closer. I think that's going to...
Yeah, well, we may have to separate. We're together now.
I've noticed that. I think it's had a...
I think we're actually better than we used to be.
Yeah, I think it builds camaraderie and team effort.
Well, he doesn't like that part, but I was meaning from his perspective. Well, obviously, teamwork and camaraderie are upsetting.
Well, the way
Sam.
It's set up, I feel like it's us against him more so now. So now I feel much more.
It's true.
It's Matt or Mike versus Sam Cedar now.
It's like it's like in the kids in the back seat, as opposed to like one kid sitting on that end of the front seat and the other kid sitting on the other end of the front seat. Now it's like they're back there, and if you don't turn around, all of a sudden, like, they've unplugged the wiring or whatever.
And we can help each other. We could be like, Dad's about to have a breakdown. Dad's going through male menopause. Yeah. Dad's very emotional today.
They can whisper to each other, he's in a bad mood right now.
That's right.
Just give him what he wants.
So now I've got to separate them, I think, and put, like, maybe – I mean, they don't have to physically move. I think there just needs to be, like, a
partition.
Like a partition. Between the two of them.
Yeah.
So that they can't, so that they
like
actually...
Like a priest thing for like confession type of thing?
That way you will pay more attention to your, you know, your computers and your consoles rather than like, oh, what do you have for lunch? Oh, look what I have. You know, you're showing each other like the ding-dongs that you have in the
We just use our computers to text each other that.
I know. I'm going
to
disable
What's great now is that
too.
we used to basically just message each other during the show. And now in addition to messaging each other, we can tap each other on the shoulder.
Right. Yeah.
Our smirks are closer and more synchronized. Yeah. This sort of vivid display of how we're not listening to what's going on. As a matter of fact, hi Matthew, I didn't notice you were here before.
Hi.
It's a better flow now.
I think the camaraderie
was Cliff on
is
today?
Reflected in the show. I think it's good.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Did Cliff make it today?
Cliff was on today.
Oh.
That's right.
Oh.
Okay.
So Matthew, film guy.
Yes, Sam Cedar.
What is up with you these days?
You know, I'm doing my film guy thing. I'm teaching my various classes.
Oh, now you have various classes.
Yep. In addition to the adult education class that I teach, I'm also teaching a graduate editing class at the film school in Sacred Heart University.
Wow. That is that's different. I mean, your adult education is really, it's a lot of
senior citizens. Yeah.
And... So you're...
I'm reaching out to the kids and to the older folks.
But one is more vocational, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's a film school. It's, you know, I'm...
The senior citizen one.
No, the senior citizen. You know, in a way to keep their minds, you know, sharp and to be socially engaged, that does have a very sort of a deliberate effect. Maybe not vocational, but it does have more than just a...
Therapeutic. That's
therapeutic,
fine. I mean, that's my...
There's cookies.
My great uncle, who my son Saul was named after, he was taking classes, I think, into his early hundreds.
Wow.
Yeah, he was actually taking. Oh, you want
to? You had to specify early hundreds, not just into his hundreds. Like he how long? How
he quit
old
by
is
his late hundreds.
Well, he lived to 104.
That's
so
amazing.
I mean, it was like when he was 100, 101.
Yeah.
He was still taking classes.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's great for me because I get, you know, that's the film appreciation side of things. And then the editing is, you know, it's I'm teaching my craft what I do. And so I get to sort of bore down small.
The amazing thing with my Uncle Saul is that the classes he was taking were actually like car repair. I mean, he was actually getting underneath the hood and doing...
That's awesome.
No, that's not true. It was,
He was Jewish.
No, it's not that. He was actually quite a tinkerer in his day. But,
You are looking at the only Jew in America that subscribes to Handyman Magazine.
That's right. I forgot.
Subscribe to Handy Manstein. Manstein.
Handy Manischewitz.
So, you want to build a new fridge and get a tax credit? We'll show you the way.
Actually, my uncle, who's an Orthodox Jew, is like a carpenter par excellence. He's built really fancy mahogany furniture and stuff.
You know who is one of the first, one of the big, more prominent Jewish carpenters?
Who's that, Sam?
All right, so Michael and Matthew.
It was a very nice man who said nothing new.
Nothing new.
It's just absolutely a shame he's gotten so much prominence.
Yeah, I may have heard that one before, too.
He was very nice, but he was a Jew.
He was Jewish, you know.
Was another rabbi.
So you're teaching these classes.
That's right.
What else?
I'm actually working right now on group of behind-the-scenes videos for Teacher's Lounge, which was one of the premiums that we wanted to give out to our Kickstarter members.
And how's that going? Is that going to – are you going to do another
It's getting a lot of great response. We actually won an industry award. It's called the Synopsis Media Awards. It's media web media awards. So we won Best New Comedy Series and Best Celebrity in a Web Series for the Jim Gaffigan episode.
Wow.
So we've getting a little bit of recognition from the behind-the-scenes people there.
And so what do you do with something like that? You just go on and you do another project, right? You don't do the same one.
Well, that's the thing. Right now, Ted and Hollis, who the creators are, from what I understand, have a lot of feelers out in terms of different modes that it could take, whether that would be a half-hour pilot, more traditional, longer web series with more money, or just another round similarly because they were such a hit in their current format. So... you know, it remains to be seen what the best next place for it to be is, but it's going to do something.
Now, did their Indiegogo campaign that they did that basically fund the vast majority of it?
It was Kickstarter, and yeah, it did. It let us shoot 6 new episodes.
That's fascinating because, I mean, you and just to remind people who have not listened to the program before and aren't familiar with Matthew and I's history, but Matthew and I met when I hired Matthew to be my assistant on a movie I directed that I also, at the time, the idea wasn't that I was going to completely self-fund it.
Right.
It was actually, we had funding from somebody else, but it was about it was following the 2000 election. It was about Joe Lieberman's fictional son who was mad about the 2000 election, was inculcated to commit a terrorist attack, and we were literally in the week 8 of editing, I think, when the planes hit the towers and we lost all the finishing funding. But Matthew, I hired as my assistant, and then to make sure that he didn't wander off during the shoot, because I was acting it as well, I hired him to play my assistant on the...
That's right. And that began my long, illustrious acting career.
In fact, you did have a couple other...
That's right. One of which was also your next project, pilot season.
That's right.
What else have you been in?
Let's see. I did a number of student short films. I went on to do a number of sketch show and improv shows for a number of years there around the world, touring a little bit.
Really? We brought you into Break Room Live a little bit, too?
That's right. I did some bits with
Maron.
Mark. Yep.
I
just had a cameo in Tom Noonan's new movie, but it's still being edited, so you'll have to see.
You never know. But the point being that I had self-financed a couple of projects back then because there was no Indiegogo.
Yeah, there was just calling people you knew.
Well, no. It was just basically you got to either do a sitcom or you can't do it. That was basically it back then.
Yeah.
You pay for it, and then you wait and do another one.
You know, another thing is that we got a little bit of seed money for Teacher's Lounge from Thunder Shorts, who was the company that eventually distributed it. So that was like an advance against the ad
And
revenue.
They're distributing shorts now, too, which there was no market for distributing shorts.
That's what the audience is for, like online right now, is for, you know, under 5, you know, minutes.
So how do shorts get distributed? I mean, like in this day and age,
you know, they run. They're financed by the ads that are run on them.
And oh, okay.
It's what you can feel you can leverage on number of clicks. You can either promise through, like, everyone was excited about Jim Gaffigan because he has 2.5 million Twitter followers. So
it's like, where do you get the ads from? From Google, or do you put them on Vimeo? What is it? I don't understand. How does this work?
Okay, so from what and this is not necessarily my area of expertise, but from what I was told is they. They had a marketing department that would go out and pitch it to companies and say that we could, you know, guarantee this or we suspect this many number of views, and they run them before and after on, like, for instance, YouTube. But
so an
they have their own site as well.
Distribution company. It's not really a distribution company. It's really just sort of like some type of media broker.
Right.
Who's going
That's
to
what it seems like to me, yeah.
Going to sell ads against your property, and they're just buying the rights to sell ads on it because distribution now online –
It's a
Who
website.
Cares? It doesn't matter. You go on YouTube, and it's you got your channels of distribution are through Jim Gaffigan's Twitter feed, or Sam Cedar's Twitter feed. If you guys ever smarten up a little bit,
yeah. If we want to add a couple more dozen views, no, are you kidding? I've promoted the hell out of the Teacher's Lounge on this show, and I've gotten nothing but good feedback from people who say they found it through here. So.
All right.
I thought Matthew was about to be like, no, are you kidding? You're absolutely not going to be on. the show in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, that's it's all remains to be seen what happens in the next round. Again, I don't control the casting.
I guess
decisions.
It's all contingent upon whether or not I get onto Maron's show.
Yeah, is that have you heard anything about that? Yeah, I know he's writing season 3
now.
Let
me tell you something. It is so stunning because we went through this last time, Maron and I, right? We was like, hey, I'm writing you into season 2 of the show.
Right.
And I get a call from him. Hey, I'm sitting with Dave Anthony right now. We're breaking your story.
That was from season 2.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then he ignores me on Twitter and on texts that I send him and phone calls for 3 months until he's actually shooting. And then he ignores me for another month. And it was all because he was afraid of telling me that they didn't break a story. And it's the same exact thing has happened at this point.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Did he tell you he was writing it to start or that it was?
Oh, yeah. No. The last I heard from him was like, hey, Dave Anthony and I are breaking the story again. Like, no, he texted me. You know what it was? He texted me like, hey, how many downloads do you get generally? And I'm like, I don't know.
Right. He's trying to build a case.
Why are you asking? And he's like, we're breaking a story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. And that was the last I heard from him. He won't respond. And I want him to, you know, give me a promo for this Indiegogo account. And I don't know if he'll do it. So I may just Skype him. Just monitor Skype until I see that he's actually on. And just Skype
him. Is it? I didn't even realize.
Yeah, do it from a different account, too.
I tried to pitch myself as a director for one of the episodes, and he was just like, you could do that? Yeah. I was like, yeah, I just, you know, I did this whole web series.
Oh,
and
if he was smart, he would have hired me as a director a long time ago for that.
Yeah.
But
he's got Bobcat Goldthwait, who I can't complain about. I like his work.
Yes, Bobcat's good.
We're workshopping some stuff, and I'll let you guys know.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are good. Yeah.
So let's hear what you have for us. Now, do you remember what you suggested last time?
No.
Well.
Do you?
It was a test. I was all ready. No, I don't remember. Do you remember? Does anybody remember? Do we have, is there a producer in the house?
Oh, my goodness. Let me see if I can have it on my list here.
This is, this is embarrassing.
For all of us. But at least we're in it together.
Right.
And we're close.
That's great.
You guys are sitting close.
Well, all right. So I guess it must not have been very important.
I'm sure it was amazing.
When was the last time you were on? October?
Yeah.
October the 3rd?
No.
Because
if it was that, then the last we saw, the last you suggested was, doesn't say in the description.
Kudos. Well, kudos.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Helloware. Helloware.
Oh, Helloware. Yeah. Did you see that?
No.
Wait, what was it again?
Helloware by Michael Blandich. It's an independent film about a photographer from Williamsburg who tries to exploit
a juggalo style
band.
I have no recollection of that at all.
It was hilarious. It's a
is
hilarious.
It funny? It's really funny.
It's a hilarious satire on the sort of the hipster artist and trying to make his way into the scene and what he's the length he's willing to go to. I think it's right up your alley. You'd love it.
All right.
And it was one of my favorite movies from a couple of years ago when it played at festivals.
Okay, so Helloware.
But didn't I also kind of run you through, like, I've been having a big Steve Coogan moment watching a lot of his stuff?
No, but that's definitely, I mean, I'm a big Steve Coogan fan.
Did you see the Trip, any of those, the Trip to Italy?
You know, the Trip where he went with, what's his face?
Rob Brydon.
Yeah, nah, it did not do it for me. I don't know if I was in a certain mood. I heard very good things about it, and I watched it, and I was like, eh. I don't know. I found the tone inaccessible.
Mm. It's edited down from a 6-episode TV show that they did in England, and I have a feeling that what they edited out was a lot of its sort of Britishisms, like a lot of references to British celebrities and a lot of things that made it sort of insular to the world of the UK, but it's still some of that still survived. I think I watched the full version, so a lot of the jokes went over my head in terms of who they were referencing. But I've just reignited my love for him and went back and watched all the old Alan Partridge stuff. And then he has new stuff. You know, I think I sent you a link, actually, didn't I?
Dude, if I showed you my mailbox, you would know. But, okay.
Well, all that aside, that's just what I wanted to clean house with, because those are on the entertainment side of things.
He didn't do the Brass Eye, right? That was a different
guy. No, that's Chris Morris.
That was Chris Morris.
But they both started on the Day Today.
That's why I get them confused sometimes.
Yeah. But one of the things.
Brass Eye was pretty damn
good. Oh, yeah. Brass Eye is great. And Jam, Chris Morris's, all of Chris Morris's
stuff. All
my
references are from like 15, 20 years ago.
Well, you know, that's one of the jokes in the trip is that Coogan was big in the 90s and now he's sort of struggling to be like a Hollywood relevant actor. And that's why Rob Brydon teases him a lot. But anyway, be that as it may, how great those are.
Indeed.
I wanted to suggest something that I think you could probably watch with at least Nikki, if not the whole family. Probably not the whole family.
Oh, all right.
But I have been teaching my class with the senior citizens this semester, and the theme has been religion and spirituality in films. And we've been dealing a lot with the idea of how a film can sort of take you a certain place spiritually and not just entertain you. And as much as I love films for entertainment, I watched this one film with the class that...
Well, that's why you're Matthew Film Guy, not Matthew Movie Guy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, isn't that it?
I could be Matthew Movie Guy, too, but here I'm Matthew Film Guy.
All right. Suit yourself.
Yeah. Sounds like Swami Matthew Film Guy. It's
yeah.
It's a spiritual emphasis. I like it.
Guru Guy. Well,
more like Smarmy Matthew Film Guy.
Hey. There you go. Everybody's coming
Wouldn't
up with
you
things
like
that
to
rhyme.
Know. Wouldn't you like to know? So anyway, one of the best films that I saw with this class is actually a Korean film.
Wait, had you
film.
Not seen it before? You just watched it for the first time with your class?
Yes.
That's the type of preparation I would be a little bit annoyed about. If
well,
I was,
you haven't
like,
been
what
to
if
my
everybody
class.
At the end of the class is like, that wasn't very good.
Can I just say how
I do
disturbing it is to me, how vividly I could see Sam right now in a senior citizens film class complaining about just that very thing. Like the fact that I didn't even need to take a step. Like I didn't even really need to age
I
Sam.
I was just doing
I
it.
I just saw it.
I mean, look, I'm sitting here. I'm paying for a class. You're the teacher. Put together the syllabus. Don't come in and try this out. I'm not a guinea pig.
Sam.
Hey, it's not like I have that much time left.
Nobody complains about the way I handle it.
During the Korean cinema, I could have been reading a Social Security trust fund report.
Not to your face. Not to your face.
No, no, no. I've heard all the feedback from the woman who runs it, so believe me.
All right. Whatever
so
they tell you.
Occasionally, I'll show a film that I've heard is great.
I don't know if you've ever seen Survivor. That's the way when you're right on the top or you think, like, I'm totally in control. That's when they get you.
Yeah. I don't really watch Survivor.
All right. Well, I'm just telling you.
Okay. So here's the film that I want you to watch. And I know that it'll appeal to Nikki, too, knowing her proclivities. It's called Spring, Summer, Fall, Winter, and Spring. It's a Korean film. And it's ostensibly about a Buddhist monk and his life on this floating monastery in the middle of a lake. And if I could give you the log line for it, it would sound like the most sort of uneventful film, but it is actually extremely gripping, and it has a way of embodying what I've come to understand as some Buddhist tenets without being preachy, without being too artsy-fartsy. It has a lot of drama. It has sex and violence, and things happen in it, but it's extremely brilliantly structured and paced, and it actually conveys something in a way that I've never seen a film, even a so-called spiritual film, be able to convey. And
what does it convey, or is that a spoiler alert?
Well, no, not necessarily a spoiler alert, but it has that. It doesn't portray religion as being something apart from life. It doesn't. It portrays religion as being a way of handling your day-to-day feelings, your day-to-day impulses, the things that actually drive human beings, and it's not some airy-fairy kind of new-agey, otherworldly thing that just puts you above the sort of dirty, messy parts of life. So it's actually about a monk and his young sort of charge and how he grows up over a number of years. And each segment is spring, winter, fall. Spring, summer, fall, winter, and spring, but they go by in years.
I see.
So it's like his life divided into that way. It's an amazing film from start to finish. You'll be gripped. And it actually has a way of, you know, I watch a lot of
How
television.
Long is it?
It's about an hour and a half. It's not
That's
actually
perfect.
A really long movie.
All right.
And
when you have five seasons, it sounds like it might be a little bit long.
No, they're all sort of self-contained little vignettes, and they come together. It just blew my mind. I'd never seen anything by the director before.
Something that blew Matthew Film Guy's mind,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, it moved its way onto like maybe my top 10 favorite movies of all.
Wow.
After watching that, yeah.
Holy cow. When did you watch this?
At the beginning of the semester, maybe 2 months ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now,
Now,
highly
why
recommended.
Did you, let me ask you this. Why did you watch it without watching it first?
Well, I had, first of all, I don't get paid a lot to do that class. So I also like
so
to.
So laziness.
No, not laziness. Deliberate intention, you know, and.
Deliberately trying not to exert more effort than
has,
you
no,
get
No, it has
paid
nothing
for.
To do with effort. It has to do with exploring these films with the class. So being able to.
That's the rationalization.
I'm not just preaching it. Well, you're asking me. I'm going to tell you. It's not just preaching to the choir, you know, not just going to whip some ideas on them. And it's a chance to actually be fresh with the film as I watch it with them. But these are all films that I've researched anyway. I researched the sort of the making of the film. I researched the themes of the film. So I come in with – I don't pick them without knowing that they're going to basically illustrate certain things in film that I'm there to explicate.
Wow. And how did the class react to that film? Did they all
They loved it. It was a huge hit. You know, I showed some other films in that class that were more explicitly religious. Like this one has a monk in it, so it does have sort of the trappings. Uh-huh. But I showed a movie by Carl Dreyer, which is one of my favorites, called Ordet. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
It's where the family – there's two families, and the one son wants to marry in the other family, but they practice a different kind of Christianity, so they don't want him to marry. Mm-hmm. And the one son thinks he's Jesus, so it has a lot of very explicit religious content, like what is God and what is – and they didn't respond to that one quite as well, even though I think that's a very deep film. So I also showed The Life of Brian, which is a classic religious comedy, and
Did they get it? Did they know that it was a comedy?
Yeah, they all laughed. They all laughed. There's a lot of good jokes in that about that old Jewish guy. No, I have a very smart group of senior citizens. A lot of them.
Someone raises their hand halfway through. Matthew, is this a comedy?
That was a very heavy film, Matthew. And I do like the Asians and the monks. They're very studious people. They do well in their tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if Buddhism would be a good thing for my my arthritis.
Yeah, that's exactly what they say to me. And I always say, yes, definitely. Rub some Buddhism on it.
So, all right. So, now, what do you got on your list there? Is that all? What is it?
It's just a couple other ones. Like, you know,
you got a whole list of them there. Are you really? What are you loading up? You know what we're going to have to do?
I do prepare for this show.
I'm thinking that right now, the 31st falls in the middle of the week. I think it's like on a Wednesday of December. And we're on vacation at that time. I was thinking of maybe just doing like a quick, 30 or 40-minute show, maybe just for members. I'm not sure on that day, maybe for everybody. And I was thinking of doing the same thing where we had you and Isabel on again to do some maybe some roundout, some movies. So maybe you want to save some of those.
Sure,
or do
no
you
problem.
Want, you want to just, because you got a whole list there.
Well, it was some of them were just other ideas of things to tell you, but the
or were you not sure which one you were going to recommend, and you're just going to take my temperature?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to feel you out.
Wow.
Because I watching all that trip stuff, they do a lot of Michael Caine impersonations. Like that's one of the recurring
bits. Yes, I saw that.
So that sent me off to watching a lot of his movies.
But you know, it's like the Michael Caine impersonation thing. It was just
she was only 15 years old.
No, I know. I get it.
Is that Australian Michael Caine?
I felt like that was like an old, I don't know. I just felt like the Michael Caine thing just struck me as sort of old.
Yeah. Well, they're old, and I think that's sort of their references. But
they weren't mocking that they were mocking Michael Caine, and that's what I wanted to see.
I see.
Like a little bit more awareness of like, wow. You know, because that's what I would do. Like, that's like my references are old, and I'm aware that they're old.
They do Roger Moore. They do like a lot of the things that are Coogan's sort of bag of tricks, you know. So they, to me, it's not necessarily how funny the impressions are per se, which they are very funny, but it's the camaraderie, it's the jibes, the sort of the back and forth. You have to be willing to hang out with them for an hour and a half and enjoy that.
Yeah, well, you know what? I just say there's just a little too much British stuff going on, too. That's all I'm saying.
Well, then forget it.
I want a little bit more America first.
Why are they so British? Can they talk like regular people?
Matthew, why don't you stay here and we'll chat into, we should go, let's head into the fun half and say goodbye to the freebies, even though they got a whole show.
You take and you take and you take freebies.
Members are going to get that much more. Folks, I guess I should remind you, this show is reliant on our members. So if you have the financial means to become a member, by all means, do. Also, if you want to spend no money than you would otherwise plan to spend, if you want to do nothing, head to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the Amazon link. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link. We get a kickback. Oh, and apparently some people in, is it the Men's Rights thing or the Gamergate? Who is it?
Oh, you're talking about that tweet with the kickback?
Yeah. Matthew told me there was a tweet, where somebody was like,
it's Gamergate.
Oh, no wonder why Sam Cedar should care about ethics and gaming journalism. He's taking kickbacks.
Are you?
Apparently, I'm also stupid enough to say, like, I'm getting kickbacks. Like, I'm not sure. Anyways.
He used a screenshot of you going back and forth with a listener about Amazon affiliates and the kickback. You literally used the word Amazon affiliates and kickback in your tweets. And he uses that screenshot to prove you accept kickbacks.
That's the type of analytic rigor
that you get. That's right. And also JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. If you use the coupon code MAJORITY, don't tell anybody, but not only do you get 10% off,
we get a kickback. Sam, how many freaking times do we have to tell you to stop saying it?
Ah!
God.
It's like I'm on some type of truth serum. Just use the coupon 10%, majority get 10% off just for the sake of it. We get a kickback.
Stop. Jesus. You lost it, Sam.
All right. 646-257-3920. You know the IM. You can IM us through the app at Majority App, where we don't get a kickback.
You would be whacked so many years ago if you were in the mob.
Oh, God.
It's incredible. You're just like a friggin' you're a rat even when you don't need to be.
Unbelievable.
You're covering my parking, right?